welcome to the Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Hold questions, hold comments for tonight in terms of at least the second half of the show. We got a special interview coming up with Mikayla Ogrodnichuk. Mikayla and I spoke earlier today, and we got an interview out of that in terms of coming in there. As I fade out USS, good band from Toronto. Mikayla and I spoke about everything going on in her career and what she does off the ice. Off the ice is fantastic. She is an outstanding student athlete, outstanding community, I'm going to say community icon for all the work she's doing in terms of mental health initiatives and mental health support. Also helps around the campus. Great interview with her, so we're going to get into that right away in terms of getting everything going. As it stands right now, we will do the second half a little bit differently. It's just me in here tonight, no Beans tonight, as he's off. We'll explain why if he's back next week, but he has some big news as well, so I'll leave that for him to announce. In saying that, though, we're going to get into, as I said, into the interview with Mikayla right away. If you've watched Canada West hockey, you're going to notice that she's a pretty good player. And pretty good is probably the nicest way I can put it, because we don't give her too much credit, being that she's from one of our rivals. But at the same time, though, she's an outstanding woman, and I'm glad that I got a chance to talk to her. So we're going to bring that on here momentarily with Mikayla Ogrodnichuk here on 101.5 UMFM. It is the Hockey Show here on a Thursday night. I'll be back in about 25 minutes, and we'll wrap up the rest of the show there. So here is Mikayla Ogrodnichuk, live with me earlier today at the studio. Ladies and gentlemen, the Hockey Show is proud, humbled, honored to welcome a fascinating woman to the show tonight. Her work on the UBC Thunderbirds blue line often goes unheralded, as her name doesn't fill the score sheet that often, but she is a reliable, dependable, and skilled defender for the Canada West squad. More importantly, though, she's been a part of two medal-winning UBC Thunderbird teams at the U Sports National Championships. She's doing extraordinary work on behalf of mental health initiatives, and she's an outstanding person in her community. The Hockey Show is honored to welcome Mikayla Ogrodnichuk to the show. How are you, Mikayla?
Great. Thanks for having me on the show today.
Hey, no problem. We're excited to talk to you. You got a lot going on. So I'm going to go way back in the Wayback Machine here and start at the beginning. By that, I mean May 12th, 1997 in Vancouver, British Columbia, when the Ogrodnichuks welcomed a wee baby girl to the world. Give us a glimpse in what it was like growing up in the Ogrodnichuk household as a child.
Well, it was pretty unique. I've grown up on the campus of UBC since I was 2 months old, so it's a pretty special background to have, especially now suiting up for the blue and gold. So definitely something that not many kids can say that they've done, growing up on a university campus and kind of having a inside scoop on what it's like before you even get there. So I'm pretty lucky.
Yeah, I mean, you sort of get the inside look at university life without paying the tuition, eh?
Exactly.
That's all right, then. So at what age did you first don the skates to become a hockey player?
I started skating probably as soon as I could walk, but didn't suit up to play hockey till I was around 9 years old. So I had a little bit of skating background, but not a lot of hockey background when I started.
What was the, I hate to say it, call it a delay, but what was the cause for the wait till nine years old?
Honestly, I hadn't really expressed interest in it. I have a younger brother and then my dad who plays, and kind of just got tired of watching them play every Friday night. So if I could suit up alongside them, and that was how it all started.
That's all right then. Were there other sports that you played that saw you bring home some hardware?
I played just about everything I could possibly get my hands on as a kid.
Right on. Yeah. You recently brought home a bronze medal in a pretty cool sport. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Ultimate Frisbee?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I picked that sport up pretty late in high school, and it's pretty big in Vancouver right now. So I just gave it a go and was lucky enough to make the Francophone Team BC and got to take a trip to Quebec to the Francophone Games and came home with some hardware. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, no doubt. That's awesome. It's huge out here too in Manitoba. So yeah, no, mm-hmm. we totally know what you guys are going through. In 2011, you played your first games for the BC Female Midget AAA League with the Fraser Valley Phantom, now known as the Fraser Valley Rush, I believe. Yes. And it was the start of a few big years of hockey for you. In 2013, the Phantom went out and won the Mandy Schwinn Midget Hockey Tournament at Notre Dame in Wilcox, Saskatchewan. Huge accomplishment on that when you defeated the Winnipeg Astros in the final, which is the first of many wins against Winnipeg-based teams you can put on your resume. You helped Fraser Valley win the BC Provincial Championship. You helped the team place fifth at the ESO Cup and were part of Team BC at the National Women's Under-18 Championship. And just to top things off, you were named as the 2013-2014 BC Female Midget AAA First Team All-Star that year as well on the blue line. In short, huge 18 months, for you in hockey. So aside from all the winning and all the traveling, what stands out most about your time with the Phantom?
I absolutely loved my time with the Phantom. We had a really special group of girls and very talented group, so we really enjoyed just coming to the rink every day. It was a very unique team in that we had players coming from Vancouver all the way out to Chilliwack. So for people not familiar, that's about a two-hour difference in locations. So we met in Langley, which was kind of our home ground. And we were there a lot of days of the week, but we really enjoyed just coming together and getting better. And I get to play against a lot of my old teammates now in the Can West. And yes, it's pretty special to be able to share the ice with them again. So
you guys sent a number of players on to different U Sports teams, and that's fantastic in terms of everything that's gone on there. But if it were me, I think the one thing that may have stood out, and again, this is just me being doing a little digging into your career, but if the one thing that may have stood out was when you shattered a pane of plexiglass with a slap shot. Where did you unleash that cannon, and what was your reaction from your teammates?
It was just before Christmas, heading out to the Max tournament when I was still playing with the Phantom, and we had a late night practice out at the Langley Sportsplex, and we were just shooting around at the end of practice, and I missed the net. It hit the pane of glass and absolutely shattered, and I have never witnessed anything like that, so it was crazy. So at the end of the year, one of my assistant coaches actually kept a piece of that glass, and it was shaped almost like the Phantom on our jersey. So
oh, nice.
That's a little keepsake that I have.
That's
from
cool.
It.
Yeah, there you go. In your 3-plus seasons with Fraser Valley, you played 91 games, scoring 15 goals, adding 29 helpers, including being second in team scoring in 2014-2015 with 17 points in 24 regular season games. But it would be September 18th, 2014, where things would change in a big way for you. Do you recall what happened that day?
I do not.
So that was the day officially you put pen to paper as a UBC commit.
Yeah, that was a pretty special day.
That's a pretty big day. What do you recall about getting those papers in front of you?
A dream come true, really, for me. I watched the T-Birds, and I would sit in the stands every Friday night, and they would play after my dad got off the ice. So being able to make that official was something that I had really thought about and hoped to come true at some point. So that was a pretty special moment for me.
Now, you played for the Vancouver Thunderbirds minor hockey. Was it kind of always fate to be a Thunderbird for you?
I hoped so. Yeah.
So your first season as a Thunderbird, you get in there in 2015-2016, and you guys go all the way to the U Sports National Championship Final. Fortunately, you lost. You did pick up a silver medal, though, but it's not a bad way to kick off your university career. What stands out from that sort of U Sports experience for your first season there?
It was almost a storybook ending for us. As a first year, you couldn't have asked for anything more. We had an amazing group of players and coaches and everything, and just the desire to win and the will to push through the many ups and downs we had. So I think I definitely learned a lot from that group and that experience, and it's helped me to show the younger girls coming in what it takes to win a national championship.
You weren't satisfied with just the silver medal, though, because you guys decided to go back the next season as well.
Yeah.
You and your teammates went back to the U Sports National Championship tournament and actually came away with a bronze medal, but obviously not quite the gold medal. But it's always better to win that last game of the season in terms of any season. So what made the 2016-2017 run where you guys basically became back-to-back medal winners so special?
It's never been done before by a Thunderbird group, so that was probably the most special thing for us, for sure.
Was there anything that stood out from that 2016-2017 team that really sort of caught your attention? Obviously, there was one big sort of thing that happened earlier in your career, and we'll talk about that in a few seconds, but is there anything that sort of, that sort of pushed you guys to go a little bit further in 2016-2017 or even in the previous year in 2015-2016?
I definitely think what you're referring to, the loss of Laura Taylor, yeah, definitely pushed us through and gave us a sense of purpose and wanting to do it for her. But I also think that we had a really big roster that year, and just our ability to push each other and support each other, and definitely helped us to get to where we ended up in that year.
So, I mean, let's get into that real reason why we're talking to you, because you're doing a ton of incredible stuff off the ice as well. As you mentioned earlier, you grew up on the UBC campus, learned to skate at the Doug Mitchell Thunderbird Sports Center thanks to your dad, Dr. John Grodnichuk, a psychiatrist at UBC, who legitimately worked on campus and brought you to work every day. You literally bleed blue and gold, though, it seems, in terms of what's going on. So, I mean, from the time, like you said, 2 months till today, you've been a Thunderbird, or at least a future Thunderbird anyway. So it should be no surprise that you're deeply connected to the school through the community and campus initiative you're involved with. Let's start with the first initiative, which is the UBC Thunderbirds Mental Health Hub, which you had a hand in developing. Obviously, your dad did as well. Tell us a little bit about the Mental Health Hub and what it hopes to accomplish.
Yeah, so the UBC Athletes Hub is a comprehensive website that is a resource for student athletes for mental health. And so it's a place that athletes at UBC can go to, and it's there's supports, there's resources, there's tips and tricks on different things that they can do to help their mental health. And it's just something that no other university right now has. And so I felt that there was a big gap in kind of the middle ground between no help and going to see professional help. And so I was hoping that we could fill that void, and that's how UBC Athletes Hub came to life.
Yeah, I mean, I poked around on it a little bit, and I mean, it's amazing how many people are actually just contributing experiences on that site. I mean, I don't know if there's another place like it. Forget university athletics or anything like that. I don't know if there's another place on the internet that's like that, where people are coming to basically be open about some of the mental health challenges that they do face. Did you model it after anything? Was it sort of, we'll just build this and figure out where we go from here? Like, how did it get sort of to where it is today?
Yeah, so as we were looking to create the website, I did a lot of research with my dad and some of his colleagues on what resources were actually available, and we came across a website from the University of Michigan and their athletic department.
Okay.
And they had something similar that we really liked, how they had put it together, and so we modeled it after them and used our own information and resources and put it together that way.
Well, I mean, it's an impressive website. Like I said, I poked around on it and was pretty impressed by everything I read, so that's fantastic. Now, obviously, mental health is something you're working to bring to light, you know, more to light anyway, every day, and rightfully so after it hit home. Laura Taylor, who we know was a goaltender with UBC, was a teammate of yours who spent almost half her life dealing with bipolar disorder and depression before taking her own life on April 7th, 2016. It's been stated that she's never really shown, or she never did show her struggles, nor did she really tell anybody about the struggle she was going through. Obviously, the devastation of learning of her, you know, her suicide was awful. But how did the loss of Laura, you know, affect you personally?
Yeah, it was pretty shattering when we found out. Nothing that you would ever expect to be told as a varsity athlete or as a hockey player. And so that really hit home, and just, you didn't think that that was a possibility. So for me, it really inspired the mental health awareness initiatives that our team has taken part of, and especially the building of the website. So that I've really kept with me, and it pushes me every day to make sure that within our team and our student-athlete community at UBC that everyone is very open and welcoming and supportive of one another, regardless of what they're going through. So trying to take the positive out of it and continue to move on.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's huge, trying to find the positive out of it. I know that, I mean, there were reports, and certainly I've read the reports and read multiple stories on it as well, that she sort of sat there, didn't say anything while other people were talking about mental health issues in the dressing room. Obviously, she wasn't comfortable talking about it, but now that you have the website going, and now that you've sort of opened the door for people to be, have people come up to you and just said thank you, or have they been, you know, expressive in terms of finding a way to talk about their, you know, any of their mental health issues at UBC?
Yeah, I've definitely noticed a difference since Laura's passing. our team on campus has definitely led the way for mental health initiatives, and it's amazing how many people will just come up to you or send you a Facebook message and just thank you for what we've been doing, what I have helped with the website, and it's really great to see that there's been a shift in the mentality around mental illness, and it's only gotten a little ways. We still have a long ways to go, but it's great to see that we have been making an impact so far.
Yeah, I mean, I lost a good friend by the name of Brad Drake that I played with back in 2012 to a mental health challenge as well that he was having in terms of mental illness. So I can certainly empathize. And I mean, we've seen the support that the Bell Let's Talk campaign gets at a national, international level, especially, you know, Twitter and all the different social media stuff. But there still seems to be a stigma attached to mental health. Do you think that, I mean, obviously we're getting over that now in terms of what's going on, but there is a major stigma for those that are challenged by talking about this, that they can't come to grips or can't come find the words to express themselves?
Yeah, I personally, it's hard to put myself in someone else's shoes because everyone's situation is different. But there definitely still is a stigma around mental illness and being open about it. But we definitely have been making strides. And all we can do is continue to make sure that people are aware that it's no different than a physical injury. Right. And there should be no shame and no worry about being open about it and talking about it, for sure.
Obviously, again, you know, your dad's had a hand in getting the website and everything going. Has he been, obviously, I don't want to say visible because obviously he works at the university, but has he been there to maybe help people if they don't have anywhere to turn to or don't know where to go for professional help?
Yeah, of course. He's worked with our team a little bit on and off and has been a great resource to direct people in, where they need to go if they're needing help. We've also had some sports psych personnel working within athletics that are good resources and definitely able to help people if they need extra resources or they're not sure where to turn. So that's been really good so far.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's huge in terms of just having resources and certainly having them available at any sort of time that people need them. But let's, I mean, not to minimize this work you're doing. This is fantastic work and certainly one that hockey is certainly, you know, Rick Rippon, Wade Belak, Derek Bugard, all the players that have been affected certainly has gotten a lot more exposure, but you at the university level are doing outstanding work. But you're also part of the UBC's Access and Diversity program where you assist students with disabilities in taking notes and ensure that all students with disabilities have equal access to course material, something that, again, if you don't walk a mile in somebody's shoes, you have no idea, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's outstanding work you're doing as well. How did you get involved with that program?
So Access and Diversity at UBC is a very big program considering the size of our university. And every year there are individuals who need extra help within the courses that they're taking. So they actually send out messages and ask students if they would be willing to note take for either one student, a group of students. And so it's a position that you can take on if you're in that class and are able to be in attendance and provide accurate and good notes. And you just share it with them and make sure that they have all the course material that they require to be successful. And it also helps you at the same time make sure that you're taking good notes. And so it's a great program.
So, I mean, and again, I'm not, this is in no way trying to be facetious in any way. Like, have you made many friends doing this, or is it just one of the things where it's I show up, help you out, and then we move on sort of thing? Like, is it one of those things where it changes the university experience for both you and the person requiring help?
Yeah, so the way that this program works, it's actually a completely confidential. We don't have any of the personal information that of the student that we're working with.
Oh, okay.
And so we are provided with an email address for the individual that we're helping. And so you can either scan or type out your notes and send it to them. But within the confidentiality contract that you sign, you are not actually supposed to approach the individual and say, hey, I'm taking notes for you kind of thing. but more just to keep it so that everyone's on an equal playing ground and no one is singled out for having extra help and such.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's fair. Then, like I said, I wasn't sure how it was actually, mm-hmm. you know, you like how it was sort of administered in the background there in terms of getting everything going there. So All of this selfless work that you're doing, which, again, is absolutely fantastic, led you to winning the Canada West Student Athlete Community Service Award and had you nominated for the U Sports Community Service Award as well. Winning that Canada West Student Athlete Community Service Award, though, was a pretty big honor because, I mean, again, it shows that you basically are selfless with your time, your effort, your energy. Is that award, and I, again, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here, is that award the most meaningful one you've won so far in your career because of what it means?
Definitely, yeah. I was completely taken aback when I found out from my coach that I had won it. And it definitely meant a lot, especially with the initiatives honoring Laura and the different things that I've been working on at the university. So it's a very special award to me.
In terms of, obviously, I mean, you're going to continue on with everything that's going on as well. We don't expect you to stop now that you won the award. But looking at you know, winning the award, did you ever expect that anybody would recognize these efforts? Or was it just sort of, I'm going to do it because it's the right thing to do?
I never expected any recognition whatsoever, honestly. I wanted to do it just because I felt that there was a need and I had been personally affected by a suicide. And so I felt that nobody else should feel the way that my team and I did when we lost our teammate. And at no point was I ever expecting to be recognized for the efforts that we had done.
So you had mentioned that, you know, your coach, Graham Thomas, had spoken to you and told you about the award in terms of everything that's going on, and you were nominated for it and eventually won. How important was Graham and his staff in terms of just helping you guys cope with, obviously, the tragedy of Laura in terms of the news?
Yeah, they were a big part of it. Unfortunately, it was right at the end of the year.
Right.
So during final exams was when we found out that she was no longer with us. And so they were very good in making sure that they were in contact with everyone, especially as people went home and had finished exams and checked up on people during the summer and just continued to have conversations even through the next couple of years that we've had. Knowing that it's always in the back of our minds, and just been really good with helping us deal with it.
So I don't know if people probably aren't aware. You told me this, and I'm only going to tell people because I think it's, again, just fantastic. You wrote your MCAT this summer, which is the entry into medical school, obviously. I don't know very many people who can do a ton of, you know, a ton of homework, especially medical studies, and play hockey at a high level like you are. What's the upcoming year going to look like for Mikayla Grodnichuk when it comes to not only succeeding as a student, because you have a ridiculously good GPA and obviously into medical school, but also on the ice? What does this coming year look like for you?
Yeah, so this coming year will be an exciting one. I have not been accepted into medical school yet.
We're just going to assume it's already happened. We're already assuming that.
No, I still have a long ways to go before we can say that. But I'll be in my fourth year in kinesiology and health sciences and continuing to play on the team at UBC and working every day towards accomplishing our goal of a national championship. So it'll be an exciting one.
Do you have any personal goals set for yourself for the season?
Continue to do what I do and help the team in any way, honestly. Doesn't matter if I show up on the scoreboard or not, as long as I can help contribute in any way, I'll be happy.
No, that's exactly what it takes, right? Team effort to get to the next level, and certainly you contribute there. But you guys have a busy preseason schedule coming up. You'll play Kunlun Red Star. You'll play the centralized Chinese team that they just introduced. The Minnesota Golden Gophers are on your schedule. Minnesota State Mankato Mavericks and the Minnesota Whitecaps all on your dance card for the spring or for excuse me for the fall. What should we expect from UBC hockey this year?
I think an experienced team is coming out this year. We had a very young roster last year, and we're only bringing in a couple of first years. And I think that last year was a big learning year for us in finding roles and dealing with the graduation of seven of our amazing players the year before. So I think it's going to be a very different team this year. I'm really excited. We have a great group coming in, and I think it'll be a really good year for us.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are staring down, again, just a number of players that, like, or a number of teams, excuse me, that we were talking about there just in terms of getting going. Starts for you guys at home on October 5th against Lethbridge. A couple of your former teammates playing for Lethbridge and Delaney Ducek and Jody Gentile. And I've asked other players who we've had on the show, is it legitimately for some of you who've played on high level teams, is it just like family reunion when you go to some of these to play some of the teams in Canada West?
Yeah, we really enjoy going to the different places in Canada West. It's our division is so competitive, and we enjoy every weekend playing against the other teams. And we're not friends on the ice, but off the ice, we always get a chance to catch up and see how everyone's doing. But we definitely make sure we get the job done on the ice before we reunite after the weekend.
Yeah, I know that's probably the smartest thing to do for sure. Manitoba will visit you guys November 16th and 17th. You guys will come out and visit us here in Manitoba February 1st and February 2nd. So when you get here, I mean, don't hesitate to stop by the between the benches there and say hi. We'll definitely see if we can get you on the broadcast there for sure, Michaela. But I want to thank you for joining us here today because, I mean, again, the work you're doing out there off the ice, just as impressive on the ice. And I want to say thanks for, you know, bringing a little light to all the initiatives and certainly some of the campus and community stuff you're doing, because we don't get enough people talking about how good you guys are at everything else outside of school and hockey. So thanks for joining us and letting us into your life a little bit here.
Well, thank you so much. It was great to be on the show today.
Yeah, I know. If you're doing anything great this year, anything big this year in terms of any of those initiatives as well, give us a shout. We'll have no problem promoting the stuff that you guys are doing, especially yourself. Thanks for joining us and being a guest here tonight.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. That's Michaela Ogrodnichuk, who is going to star on the blue line for the UBC Thunderbirds this season. You can catch her down at Wayne Fleming Arena, as I said, on February 1st, February 2nd, if you want to see her live and in person.
Dive deep into the world of cinema at the Gimli Film Festival. With over 100 films at 5 venues and free on-the-beach screenings nightly, you'll be guaranteed 5 days of the best films from Manitoba's and Canada's most promising directors, along with world premieres of exceptional short and feature-length films from around the world. The Gimli Film Festival runs Wednesday, July 25th through Sunday, July 29th, just 40 minutes north of Winnipeg. Get your pass today at gimlifilm.com.
Hi, this is Jay Arner, and you're listening to UMFM from Winnipeg.
And welcome back to the Hockey Show, everybody, here on 101.5 UMFM. Glad to have you back. I'm live. We're back in the studio here after talking to Michaela there. A fantastic interview with her today in terms of everything going. And again, she's doing some outstanding work regarding mental health initiatives, mental health awareness out in BC, certainly around the campus of the University of British Columbia. And I want to thank her again for all of the fantastic information she gave us. If you're looking for any information, by all means, get onto that UBC Thunderbirds Athletes Hub. I spent some time going through it yesterday. It was outstanding in terms of some of the stuff that's on there and certainly some of the reads that are on there. Highly recommend that if you want a place to go and sort of check it out. You don't have to contribute. Maybe you're dealing with something on your own. Maybe you're having some problems in terms of mental health issues. Maybe your mental health just needs a little bit of a break in terms of some of the stuff we go through every day. If you want to go read some of those stories, though, they're outstanding, and I really want to thank everybody who's contributed on that site so far, because again, it's outstanding in terms of the work that they're doing out there. So huge thanks to Michaela Ogrodnichuk for coming on today and giving us a little bit of insight there in terms of what's going on. From there, we're going to move on to some key stories. I want to start off with obviously a tragic story as well. We just heard about Laura Taylor. This one a little bit different, though. As you may be aware, Ray Emery lost his life a few days ago on the weekend. In terms of what's going on, he drowned out in Ontario, just off the coast of Hamilton. Brutal in terms of the information that was passed on, as he submerged into Lake Ontario and did not re-emerge from the water. So a hard thing to sort of go through. There was an outpouring of grief for everyone who was a teammates, opponents, management, anybody who covered the sport, basically, once they learned of the tragic death of Mr. Emery. I don't want to go through, obviously, all of these. I'll talk about a few of them here. But players like James Van Riemsdyk tweeted out, you know, so sad to hear the tragic news about Ray Emery. He was a great person. Bernie Perron sent out all the statistics in the world. Can't measure the warmth of a smile. Rest in peace, my friend Ray Emery. Surprisingly, Buffalo Sabres tough guy Andrew Peters tweeted out, quote, never met him, always wanted to. It's sad to know I never will. Rip Ray Emery, considering they had a fight in the NHL. Nick Foligno, who played with Ray Emery, so saddened of the tragic news of Ray Emery's passing. We played together for only a short time, but he was a great teammate and competitor. My thoughts and prayers go out to his family and friends. May he rest in peace. William Nylander, who played with him for one season in Toronto as a member of the Toronto Marlies, said, horrible about Ray Emery. He was an incredible teammate. Garrett Sparks also chimed in. Horrible to hear about the tragic passing of Ray Emery. He was an incredible NHL goalie that accomplished so much in the game, and a lot of which went under the radar. He was also one of my favorite Toronto Marlies teammates in his brief time with us. Rest in peace to a legend. So, a lot of people reaching out. And I mean, I know that, you know, Ray Emery was a bit controversial in his time, obviously, in terms of played the game, but everybody talked about his intensity, his, you know, his passion for his teammates, sticking up for his teammates, that kind of stuff. And that's what you want to see. But it comes to a point now, I think, where, and again, I'll do the PSA for it right now. Water safety is a huge, huge issue. Especially with some of the news that came to light, this past week. I'll start by saying it's quite well known that Lake Ontario has a number of undertow currents that are far stronger than your normal undertow, and these are often called rip currents. Now, you may have heard of these. Jokingly, in the medical community, they're called rip, as in RIP, rest in peace currents, because of how strong they are and what they do in terms of, you know, taking lives. For those not aware, a rip current is defined as a relatively strong, narrow current flowing outward from the beach through the surf zone and presenting a hazard to swimmers. It's thought that Ray Emery, when he went under, when he jumped into the water, may have got caught in one, as they found his body some 70 feet away from where he went under the water. So that might be the reason for that. According to the National Weather Service in the U.S., an average of 12 people are killed by rip currents and 25 more are rescued on the Great Lakes every single summer. So to give you an idea, got to be aware of what's going on around you and certainly what's going on in the water as well. We hear about water safety every summer. It's hard to predict where these rip currents may exist in terms of what's going on. So if this is indeed the reason for Ray Emery's drowning, it's a reminder to be extra vigilant when venturing in the water. Use life jackets. Make sure, you know, there's flotation devices nearby, especially if it's an unknown body of water to you. First time you're going swimming or anything like that in an unknown body of water. Be vigilant. Be aware. Keep an eye on everybody. Make sure you know where your friends and family are if you're going to be on the beach. The reason I say that is that a CBC News report just yesterday found that it's basically National Drowning Prevention Week here in Manitoba. I'm not sure if anybody's aware of that. It started earlier this week. It kicked off in Manitoba this week, but showed a troubling statistic that came out on Tuesday. Children under the age of four in Manitoba are drowning at a rate three times higher than the national average. Three times higher. That's an incredible number in terms of, not incredible good, incredible as an unbelievable number. Kevin Tordiff, who works for the Life-Saving Society's provincial branch, said, quote, it's alarming and unfortunately it's a trend we've been seeing lately in Manitoba. And he also added that the number has been high for the last few years. So, gives you an idea right now that, take swimming lessons if you can. If you can get your kid into swimming lessons, make sure you get your kid into swimming lessons. It's going to be important. Learning how to tread water, that kind of stuff, in terms of just doing little things. Wear the life jackets. Wear, you know, some sort of flotation device, some sort of good flotation device. That's going to get everything going. Province is going to start a life jacket loaner program at Spruce Woods Provincial Park. But again, I don't know if that's going to, you know, do a lot right now because they're just starting it. The program, though, does exist at Baker's Narrows, Giles Lake, and Birds Hill Provincial Park already. So a couple options there if you're looking for a place to swim. So Sustainable Development Minister Rochelle Squires said, quote, a tragedy on the water can occur in a blink of an eye, which means never leaving children alone near the water and always keeping them in sight. Which, again, is basically what I just said, echoing what I just said. Keep an eye on friends and family, folks. Obviously, the passing of Ray Emery at the age of 35 is a tragic, tragic story, and we don't want any to hear about any more stories like that. So let's be vigilant around the bodies of water this summer. Everybody, make sure you're doing your best to keep an eye on everything. We'll move to better news. Well, it's still sad news, I guess, but not super sad, I guess. Big change coming up for our local Bison women's hockey team. As Bison women's hockey announced yesterday that they're going to have a new head coach for the 2018-2019 season. You heard that correctly. John Rempel has received a six-month reassignment of duties to allow for professional development, according to Bison Sports. So John Rempel will not be coaching the Bison women's hockey team this year. In his place, Sean Fisher has been named as the program's interim head coach while John is off doing his professional development. Fisher was an assistant coach with the Bison women's hockey team for the last four seasons and is looking forward to this new assignment. He said, quote, "The opportunity to lead our program for the 2018-2019 season is pretty special, and it's a great professional development opportunity for me personally. We have a number of terrific coaches on our staff, and I'm very excited to work with them towards the continued success of Bison women's hockey." Sean was there last year at the national championships. Sean was basically at every game. Sean is an outstanding guy in terms of the way he coaches and certainly his communication skills. He's done some really good stuff as well in terms of his career. He began coaching in 2004 with the Sudbury Wolves AAA Bantam program. He continued to the Nickel City Midget AAA program while attending Laurentian University. He also began coaching women's hockey upon graduating from Laurentian University, where he basically spent 3 years with the Greater Kingston Ice Wolves. He moved to Winnipeg in 2012, got an opportunity to join the women's Bison women's hockey team in 2014. He's been doing a number of behind-the-scenes stuff, fantastic work, skill development, recruiting, practice planning, special teams, a lot of video sessions with the team over the last four seasons. In 2017, he was named Director of Hockey Operations for the JWHLs, that's the Junior Women's Hockey League, Boston Shamrocks. So he got a call to get out there and get going in terms of doing that. He took that opportunity for a season, which was awesome. And there's definitely no shortage in terms of excitement as, again, most of the coaching staff will be back again. Rob Voth will be back running the defensive units again. Lisa Peters, Addy Miles, Gavin McHale, Sean Preston, possibly maybe even a guest coach in Venla Hovey, dropping by every once in a while. They're all still in. They've all worked under John and certainly in John's system. They shouldn't be that unfamiliar with it. There shouldn't be that much confusion as to how this team is going to come out and play. But it will be different without John behind the bench. I will admit that up front and certainly, maybe be the first person to say I'm going to miss John, not seeing John behind the bench, that steely glare of his that he usually gives me in terms of what's going on. Just to give you an idea, John Rempel, 14 years with Manitoba in 2017-2018. He was the U Sports Women's Hockey Coach of the Year this past year, led the Bisons to a 19-5-3-1 regular season record, program's third Canada West Championship and their first ever U Sports National Championship. Over his career, he's been in Canada West Women's Hockey Coach of the Year, five times. That's 2004, 2005, 06, 07, 14, 15, 16, 17, and of course 17, 18. So he is certainly going to be a big piece missing for the Bison this year. I'm going to say he's probably, I don't know what his reassignment is. I talked to John Gaudis, who's the sports information officer over at Bison Sports, and he said that it was something that was planned long ago. This is not new news to anybody at Bison Sports. It was something that had already been in the works. So it sounds like whatever it is that John is doing, it's going to be good for him, number one. Number two, obviously, the program itself in terms of the Bison women's hockey team, they get a good coach in Sean Fisher stepping up and running the bench now. So could be a little bit different next year in terms of the way it looks, but yeah, John won't be with the team for at least the next season. A little bit sad about that. We'll see if we can get John in here at some point. Maybe he'll be around to talk about this new opportunity he's going to be taking in the next season anyway, the next 6 months. But no John Rempel on the bench for the Bisons this year. If you're looking for him, if opposition fans like to razz him a little bit, you'll have to take a year off now because John won't be around for that. Moving to another story now. I want to get everybody caught up on one story, and this is going to be a good story as well, because I don't know if anybody's aware of what's going on since we had them on. I know we've had them on a couple times. We've caught up with them. We've done a little bit of information, bringing you information anyway about what's going on. If you remember the young lady, her name was Alex Delaloy. Alex was the cancer patient that was at the Jets game that night, and we got the update recently about her cancer. I think it was about a year ago now, her cancer being completely gone. She has not gone into remission. She's still healthy. She's still a fantastic young lady in terms of everything that's going on. We met Hayden, her brother, Hayden Delaloy, who's a fantastic guy as well. Here's your update as to what's going on. Because these two kids are just destroying every sort of idea of these kids being sort of down in the dumps or anything like that about what happened. So we'll start with Hayden, because Hayden's doing a fantastic job in terms of everything that's going on. Hayden will be going, he's going to be playing June 27th through 28th at Bell Acres Golf and Country Club in Winnipeg. He's one of the best young golfers, age 12 and younger, on the current sort of Maple Leaf Junior Golf Tour right now. He's doing some fantastic work in terms of getting everything going. He recently met Brooke Henderson, who was here in town. I forgot about that. Brooke Henderson was here in town in terms of what's going on. But Hayden's going to be going to Nationals. That's right. He's going to be going to the National Championship in terms of what's going on. Hayden has done a ton of work and certainly got himself going. I'm pretty excited about this guy. He's gonna turn. He could be our first PGA Tour member coming up here if he keeps going here, because this is outstanding information about how well he's done so far. He's been playing some fantastic golf in terms of what's going on. Just about had a hole in one this year in terms of everything that was happening. Certainly has been doing everything he could to get better. So congratulations to Hayden. This is outstanding in terms of the information on there. He's won twice on the Manitoba Junior Tour. Pair of runner-up finishes. He lost a playoff to Winnipeg's Eric Strick at Bell Acres and Country Club in late August last year. Third place finish to wind up second on Manitoba's Order of Merit standings in the Pee Wee Boys division last year. He earned an invite to the national championship in November at Reunion Resort in Kissimmee, Florida. He wound up sixth there. 54 hole total of 270 in the par 72 layout. Not bad at all. He'd probably dominate me in golf right now. So there's your updates as to what's going on with Hayden. Everybody thinks that he's going to be dominating in terms of what's going on here. So congratulations to him. And then from there, the update for Alex, as I'm just reading here from her mom in terms of what went on. Alex was in gymnastics. She earned three silver medals in all-around competition. She played rec hockey for the first time this year. And now Alex will be in the record books as she broke a record in the 25-meter backstroke at the swim meet in Swan River. Not bad at all. Kid destroys and conquers cancer and then comes back and absolutely starts setting records in the pool. So congratulations to the Delaloy family, as they've got a couple little future Olympians, I'm going to say. As long as golf stays in the Olympics. I'm pretty sure swimming will, but as long as golf stays in the Olympics, a couple of future Olympians anyway as to what's going on there. So always good to get an update as to what's going on with some of our favorite people, and I want to make sure that we pass those on, because again, we never get to hear about these things. I mean, you hear about some of the other people who have helped them out, and then there's never any ever follow-up, but we here on the Hockey Show like to do a little follow-up in terms of getting things going, so that was a big thing as well. Happy to announce that that we have officially seen the clean out of a locker at Wayne Fleming Arena. Officially, Venla Hovey has cleaned out her locker for the last time. So the Olympian no longer going to be part of the Bison. Well, no longer part of the Bison team anyway, in terms of the current roster. She still will help out and certainly get things going, but a little sad to see Venla Hovey go. I don't know if if anybody else feels that way, I hope somebody else would feel that way, because she is a phenomenal player, and certainly I'll be sad to see her go in terms of get everything going. But the other announcement that we're going to make for Bison Sports right now, Alana Sharman was named to got an invite, to the Youth National or Youth Sports team that's going to be going to the Hockey Canada Summer Showcase. She's the only Bison to go this year. It's her second time going. She was named in 2016 as well, I believe, as I read things through. And in total, of all the players that have gone, 11 of the 20 players named this year, they played at the national championship in March last season, or this past season. So a lot of good players going. Shout-outs to, obviously, to Alana for going from Manitoba, but for a few other players who played Canada West last year, Caitlin Willoughby from Saskatchewan will be going. Alex Posnikov and Kale Dillon from Alberta will be going. And then we have, I guess, Celine Tardif is the last player going. She's from UBC. There's been a couple other players. You probably recognize some of these names that we called last year during the national championship. Catherine Purchase from Concordia will be going, as is Marie Joelle Allaire. So she'll get those two will get a shot at that. Also going from Concordia, Audrey Belzeal. And from Concordia as well, Claudia Dubois. So four players that Manitoba saw and defeated in the semifinal. Yes, got to get that in. From Western, April Clark is going. As you know, they captured the silver medal as Manitoba downed them 2-0 in the final. Nobody from Queens going, unfortunately, in terms of going. But other players from national championship teams that were there. Maude Trevisan from Montreal is going to be going. Lindsay Donovan from St. Francis Xavier is going to be there. Just taking a quick peek down. Sarah Bujold from St. FX as well will be going. Catherine Dubois from Montreal, who had an outstanding tournament out there as well, will be going. So a lot of good players going on this U Sports team. U Sports last year at the Summer Showcase was 2-2. First time they've ever beaten a Team Canada team out there last year. That happened in terms of getting everything going. Stacey Colarossi from Laurentian will be the head coach. She'll have Moncton's Marc-Andre Côté, Ottawa's Greg Bowles, and Mount Alice Terry Rindress alongside her as assistant coaches as well. So, again, going to be fantastic to see these women get out there and get to play. They'll be out there in Calgary playing against, if I can find this now, playing against blah, 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 the two national development teams, and then Team Japan as well. Japan's national women's team will be coming over to play in that four-team sort of little get-together and for the showcase that they're going to be doing there in terms of everything that's going. So congratulations to Alana, because that's a huge, huge honor to get invited out to that. Certainly gives her an opportunity. She told John Gaudis of Bison Sports earlier this week, "I'm super excited to be heading out to Calgary. I'm looking forward to be playing with and against some of the top Canadian athletes. Hopefully it'll be an opportunity to learn and have some fun as well." Super humble as always for Miss Sharman, but we're going to say hopefully she goes out there and dominates. That would be fantastic. So big announcement that way. That was fantastic for her to get things going. Skippy, you're in here early. You want to get on and talk? Yeah, you're here. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Let's go through the little bit of Jets news as we round out this last 6.5 minutes here. Jacob Trouba, Jets. $3 million apart in their arbitration, and it looks like it's going to happen tomorrow. Jets will have 48 hours to figure out what they're going to do after that. Thoughts on where you're going to go with this? If you're the arbitrator, what do you plunk them down at?
Well, I think the arbitrator would side with the Trouba and Carlson's contract and Larson signed, you know, didn't he? I'm trying to remember. Did Eric OEL sign?
Oliver Larson did sign. He re-signed with Arizona.
So yeah. He will look at those contracts and put Trouba somewhere in there. And I think Trouba will get more than what the Jets want to pay for him. What I don't know is what the Jets will do.
Based on what? Well, how do you base that on? Just based on contract, or just
based on existing contracts of Larson and Carlson?
But what's your comparable though? Is just the numbers? Like, because the numbers don't say
age of the player, and numbers are maybe there are some number ice time, you know, role on the team, there are comparable numbers, maybe. And the, what does the arbiter really, how much of a percentage is he really taking it? He's taking overall feel at potential numbers.
There's sure, potential. Yeah. Oh, yeah, potential, yeah.
So I think there's a, he's looking at precedent. And precedent, you know, thinking of it like a precedent is these two players, you know, are, who can be compared to Trouba have signed. So this is, you know, maybe he won't get their numbers, but he will look at those numbers and reach for that more than what maybe the Jets are at comfortably.
So you're saying probably in the six range based upon on precedence?
I wouldn't be surprised at 6 to 6.5. I don't know what term would be. I think Trouba would probably get more, be more favored by the arbiter. But what the Jets would do for that, I really don't know. If they'd keep him or they'd just take him for a year, hoping they can trade him. Like,
I don't know if you want to trade a guy that you're... I mean, you've already had enough problems trying to sign him the first time. Now you're going to arbitration with him again.
I mean, but if you... If that arbitration, if you think that means the trade part is more, you don't think he's going to sign. You don't think you're going to reach an agreement, even after you settle with the arbitrator maybe for a year, and you sign
but,
him.
But this is where again, when you're throwing names out, Ekman Larson, Doughty, Carlson.
Because those were the recent.
I get that. Carlson, Carlson.
Doughty. But I mean, Doughty's older.
Sure, but I look at that and I go, True was never, he's hit 30 points in his career once. Those guys average 50 points a season.
But the arbiter wouldn't just look at points.
But if you're paying those guys for what they bring to the table offensively, which is exactly why they're getting that kind of money, because nobody else can do what they do.
Offensive port. Right. I saw some stat today where Trouba was in the top six for even strength points, which, you know.
But that's because he doesn't play the power play.
So the potential is if he puts on the, they put him on the power play.
But they won't, though, because they have Byfuglien and they have Myers. So the potential could be that, but they can't open up another spot for him because they play four forwards and a defenseman.
But then if there's an injury, he's that much more valuable, that much more worth what the arbiter... The arbiter will look at potential. That's how I've always looked at...
No, and I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying that
you're
in terms of looking...
what I think might happen.
In terms of what I think might happen. Right, and I'm just giving you the yang to the yin. I agree with you.
But you asked me what I think...
No, and that's exactly in terms of what I'm... Like I said, I'm just sort of giving the devil's advocate. Lowry signs 2.9 plus change per season. Good deal, bad deal.
The optics look bad now, maybe a little too much for him. But what if they didn't sign him and he's gone from the team? Would you think that would be better? We're better without Lowry?
I don't know if it's better without him, because I mean he becomes an attractive piece of trade bait now at that salary.
Yeah, I think the positives outweigh maybe the negatives. And the negative is more, it might be more than what the Jets would want to pay for him. But 3 years is still manageable even.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, there's no doubt about that. Like the salary is not high enough to break your team in terms of the salary cap you're setting up. Josh Morrissey is going to be the other big one now. What do you do with Josh? If Trouba gets 6.5, what do you give Josh Morrissey? Got 30 seconds.
He's worth at least 5. So.
And you still haven't dealt with Brandon Tanev or Marco Dano or Tucker Poolman.
Well, yeah, but Poolman's still entry level. He's still got more time to prove himself on.
Sure.
Yeah,
He's not going to arbitration, but you still need to sign him, though.
True. But. But I don't think that's going to break the bank.
No. But I'm just saying that
maybe Pullman's next contract worry about.
Yeah, in terms
but
of
then by out. Then you got to see if he's proved himself. If he's put up numbers and he's now, you know, he can replace Trouba in 3 years.
Oh, no, and that's exactly it. Like, you got to find out what he can do.
So,
right?
I'm not really worried about Pullman. And
No, but I'm just saying, in terms of your available cap space for this year, you're now, if you're going to give six and a half to Trouba.
And five.
Another five, you're now legitimately looking at somebody's got to go. We got to get rid of someone because we can't fit everybody under the cap.
Well, then you bring back the conversation of floating Perreault or Myers out there for somebody.
Or one of these other guys that might have a more attractive contract for somebody. But I agree. I mean, there's going to be some hard decisions made down on Donald and May or Portage Avenue there. So Chevy gets paid the big bucks for that.
I think arbitration feels like it's a little early. I would have thought another couple weeks into August before something happens. I guess it feels a little early.
It is, but I suppose it, you know, get it all wrapped up and get everything out of the way, I guess, in terms of everything that's going on. But anyway, I got to get out of here because you're going to be on here right away in terms of doing Free Range Radio.
Hey, it's all good. Hockey, can't go wrong with talking hockey.
No, it's been great. Just got a note, actually, from Michaela Agradnichuk as well. Said, thanks for having me on. No, thank you, Michaela. You made the show great in terms of bringing us all the information you did tonight. We will be back next week. Special show coming up. We're going to be out at Gateway Arena. Going to have some fun at the Sammy Joe Small Hockey School. We're going to talk to everybody that's there. We're going to yap with all the instructors. We're going to talk to Sammy Joe. We're going to talk to Billy Bridges. We're going to talk to whoever else is around that wants to give us a shout in terms of everything that's going. That'll be next week, everybody, so make sure you tune in for that. We're going to have lots and lots of news probably from that one, so don't miss that.
Oh, yeah. When does U Sports Hockey starts?
Officially for the women, it's October 5th. That's the night when we hang the banners here at Wayne Fleming. And officially for the men, it's a week later, so October 12th.
Give somebody something to look forward to this summer.
Exactly. There we go. In terms of everything that's happening, you can catch Michaela at UBC all season long. They start their season October 5th at home against Lethbridge. Again, as we just said, we start October 5th here against Calgary. Banners going up in terms of Canada West Championship and U Sports National Championship.
Banners going up and the one down.
Let's take the Dinos out again there. But that's Dinos. Another.
I like calling them Dinos.
Well, they pretty much are right now. They're little pushovers. In saying that, though, it's been another show here, another wrap for another show here at 101.5 UMFM. It is the Hockey Show every Thursday at 5:30. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next week.